The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello, and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. Our first article is from Booked, A Traveler's Guide to Literary Locations Around the World. Elizabeth Bennet, Mistress of Pemberley, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, Derbyshire, England. Elizabeth Bennet, the outspoken heroine of one of Jane Austen's most celebrated works, the 1813 novel Pride and Prejudice, is often considered a kind of proto-feminist, refusing to marry a man only for his property, wealth, and status. Unlike most young women of the time, Elizabeth expresses a certain hostility toward the very wealthy yet egotistical Mr. Darcy. Having already rejected one proposal from the suitor, Elizabeth is convinced he is not the man for her. It's only when Elizabeth pays a visit to Mr. Darcy's estate, Pemberley, that she begins to see things differently. As she approaches the estate, her eye is instantly caught by Pemberley House, a large, handsome stone building standing well on rising ground and backed by a ridge of high, woody hills. She is delighted by Pemberley's natural beauty. Unlike many stately houses of the time, which Elizabeth thought were marred by too many fine carpets and satin curtains, Pemberley seems different. There, Austen has a reflect. It seemed that natural beauty had been so little counteracted by an awkward taste. Like Darcy himself, the home had an unassuming beauty, unadorned by the niceties and trappings of the age. The observation triggers in Elizabeth the beginnings of a profound change of heart. It was at this moment, Austen writes, that she felt that to be mistress of Pemberley might be something. Later in the novel, after Elizabeth finally agreed to marry Darcy, her sister Jane, who up to this point thought Elizabeth still hated Darcy, asks, "Will you tell me how long you have loved him?" Elizabeth replies, "It has been coming on so gradually that I hardly know when it began, but I believe I must date it from my first seeing his beautiful grounds at Pemberley." There are two main candidates for the model on which Austen based her depiction of Pemberley. For years, scholars suggested the original was Chatsworth House, which, like the fictional version, is in the county of Derbyshire, and it was used as a setting for the 2005 film version starring Keira Knightley. More recently, however, experts' opinion have shifted in favor of Wentworth Woodhouse in nearby South Yorkshire, even more impressive than Chatsworth. At 124,600 square feet, with some 300 rooms, the 17th century Wentworth estate was once named by Guinness the largest private house in Britain. The family that owned it in Austen's time was the Fitzwilliam family, which also happens to be Mr. Darcy's first name. The Jane Austen Society continues to insist that Chatsworth House must be the model for Pemberley, because the author seems never to have visited Wentworth Woodhouse. Austen scholar Janine Barkas, on the other hand, suggests that because Austen specifically mentions Chatsworth House by name in the novel, as a place where Elizabeth and some friends traveled to visit, it can't, by the laws of literary geography, also be the basis for Pemberley. Wentworth was sold to a non-profit trust in 2016 and is now open for public tours, as is Chatsworth House. Maybe someday a vote by Pride and Prejudice readers will decide the matter. That was Elizabeth Bennet, Mistress of Pemberley. Our next article is from NationalGeographic.com. Think Bridgerton or Saltburn are scandalous? Here's the sordid history behind these English country hounds. From sex scandals to political intrigues, these are the real-life stories of six noble residences. By Andrew Nelson, May 14, 2024. Through the rise and fall of the British Empire and into the 21st century, England's country houses remain elegant symbols of aristocracy and wealth. Our fascination lies not only with their beauty, created by legends such as architect Inigo Jones and landscaper Capability Brown, but also with their social and political histories, especially those of the families who lived in them. The intrigues and assignations that unfolded in ballrooms and bedrooms are as compelling as the Sophia's Bridgerton storyline or Saltburn plot twist. Here are the stories of six such estates now open to the public. Wilton House, Wiltshire. Considered one of Britain's finest examples of Palladian architecture, Wilton House has served as a backdrop for both melodrama and murder, the latter involving the 7th Earl of Pembroke, Philip Herbert, 1652 to 1683. The hot-tempered Earl, who owned 52 mastiffs, 30 greyhounds, and one lion, was accused of several violent crimes during his time at Wilton, including impaling a jury foreman on his own sword and kicking another man to death. "You don't want to get on the wrong side of the 7th, says Ben Cowell, Director General of Historic Houses, a nonprofit organization representing 1,600 such landmarks in the United Kingdom. But Herbert got away with it, avoiding punishment thanks to his rank and privilege as a peer of the realm. In this century, Wilton went Hollywood. Its beautiful interiors and impressive south facade, designed by Inigo Jones and John Webb in 1647, appears in episodes of The Crown and especially Bridgerton. The double cube room, named for its symmetrical proportions, which Cowell describes as truly stupendous, serves as Queen Charlotte's throne room in the Netflix hit series. Wilton, near Salisbury, is open to visitors from March through December. Many come to see its artworks, including its Van Dyck portraits, and explore its 22 acres of gardens and grounds. Cowell suggests looking for the front hall statue of William Shakespeare, whose company performed at Wilton in 1603. Chatsworth, Derbyshire. At Chatsworth, history, scandal, and aristocratic intrigue converge against a timeless backdrop shaped by the visionary 18th century gardener Lancelot Capability Brown. The estate dates from 1687, but underwent many alterations, including to its grounds, planned by Brown. In 1774, the house became associated with Georgiana Spencer, the great-great-great-great-aunt of Diana Spencer, when she became the Duchess of Devonshire after marrying the 5th Duke of Devonshire, William Cavendish. Georgiana was celebrated for her stylish parties, political acumen, prodigious gambling addiction, an unconventional love life. The Duke's mistress, Lady Elizabeth Bess Foster, was one of Georgiana's best friends, and also possibly her lover. A polyamorous arrangement kept the three living together for years, until Georgiana's death in 1806. Bess kept a lock of the late Duchess's hair around her neck until the day she died in 1824. In the 20th century, Deborah Debo Mitford, one of the famous Mitford sisters, became another celebrated Duchess of Devonshire. Her sisters included an author, Nancy, a communist, Jessica, and a Nazi sympathizer, Unity, suspected of a romantic fling with Adolf Hitler. Debo is credited with rejuvenating Chatsworth, located 20 miles southwest of Sheffield, and transforming it into an attraction drawing 600,000 visitors yearly. The grounds feature accommodations in estate cottages, aka bolt holes, and shepherd's huts. Althorpe House, Northamptonshire. Star-crossed Diana Spencer, the late Princess of Wales, who riveted the world with her tangled romances, telegenic appearance, and tragic death, grew up in Althorpe House, about 75 miles northwest of central London. Weirdly, Cowell says, the name is pronounced Althorpe. Diana's brother, Charles, the current Earl of Spencer, specifies this pronunciation. The family home for more than five centuries, the 13,000-acre estate got going in 1508 when prospering sheep farmer Sir John Spencer acquired the first parcels of land. Since then, it has been passed down through 19 generations. The house, initially a 1688 Tudor structure, underwent several architectural transformations, with the grounds encompassing woodlands, farms, and an ornamental lake. Its island holds Princess Diana's final resting place, where a Doric temple bears her name. Open to the public since 1953, Althorpe House welcomes guests during the summer months, typically from July to September. The house's interior provides them an opportunity to explore its history and the legacy of its prominent inhabitants, as well as the family's collection of furniture and paintings. Cowell suggests hunting for the Rubens, Reynolds, and Gainsboroughs. Diana's gravesite is closed to visitors, but there is a memorial on the grounds where they can pay their respects to the mother of Princess Harry and William, the current heir to the British throne. Harewood House, Yorkshire. The institution of slavery tainted the massive profits that built the fortunes of the sugar-trading earls of Harewood. The construction of their eponymous 1,000-acre estate in northern England in 1751, featuring furniture supplied by Thomas Chippendale and landscaping by Capability Brown, was funded by the labor of enslaved peoples. Edwin Laschelles, 1713 to 1795, an important sugar producer, and his family owned or controlled 24 plantations in Barbados and other Caribbean islands. Over 3,000 enslaved individuals were forced to toil in the Laschelles cane fields and in their sugar refineries until the British Empire finally abolished slavery in 1838. In 1922, Henry Laschelles married Princess Mary, daughter of King George V, further entwining the family's legacy with British royalty. The current Earl of Harewood, David Henry George Laschelles, has taken steps to confront his family's troubling past with educational initiatives aimed at raising awareness about the estate's connection with the transatlantic slave trade. Laschelles is also a member of the Heirs of Slavery Group, advocating for reparative justice. Today, Harewood House's gardens and estate are open to the public. Exhibits highlight the Lashell's family's history as well as the lives of enslaved Africans. Cliveden, Berkshire. Cliveden has a tumultuous history marked by feuds, flames, and political cabals that belie its handsome facade. The house was built in 1666 as a hunting box for the Countess of Shrewsbury, mistress to the Duke of Buckingham, who killed her husband in a 1668 duel. Following a destructive fire in 1851, the current house was reconstructed and later sold in 1893 by the Duke of Westminster to William Astor, an American plutocrat. His son Waldorf and Waldorf's wife Nancy fashioned Cliveden into an influential Edwardian social hub that spanned the political, cultural, and business worlds on both sides of the Atlantic. Nancy, a fabled host and first female member of Parliament, entertained guests such as Henry James, Edith Wharton, Charlie Chaplin, and in the late 1930s, United States Ambassador Joe Kennedy and his family, including future President John F. Kennedy. The Astor gatherings weren't without controversy. Many of their friends were believed to be Nazi sympathizers. In 1961, the house would become central to another political firestorm after British Secretary of State John Profumo met 19-year-old party fixture Christine Keeler at a Cliveden party and began an adulterous affair. Keeler was also involved with a Soviet spy. Uproar around the story led to Profumo's resignation and contributed to Prime Minister Harold Macmillan's own. Today, Cliveden is a 5-star hotel about 30 miles west of London. Travelers can explore its history through 30-minute tours on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays between March and October. The grounds are open to visitors, inviting them to wander and conjure up the legendary parties and political deals that occurred here. Noel Kent. Noel, the sprawling Jacobean-era estate owned by the Sackville-West family, holds a prominent place in English LGBTQ history as the ancestral home of Vida Sackville-West, the writer and gardener whose lesbian love affair with author Virginia Woolf set tongues wagging in the 1920s. Originally built between 1456 and 1486 by an Archbishop of Canterbury, Knoll at one point was a royal residence frequented by Henry VIII and Elizabeth I. In 1605, Elizabethan power broker Thomas Sackville purchased the place. With 400 rooms, Knoll House is larger than Buckingham Palace. But it is Wolfe and Sackville West and their artistic circle, known as the Bloomsbury Group, that had the most famous ties with Noel, though Vida would never inherit her girlhood home thanks to primogeniture. After her marriage, she and her bisexual husband, diplomat Harold Nicholson, lived elsewhere. Noel's curator, Eleanor Black, says the 1,000-acre estate about 40 miles southeast of London is accessible to the public 24/7, with visitors invited to explore the grounds. The Beatles did just that in 1967, filming a short for their song Strawberry Fields on the estate. Though home to a new generation of Sackville West, visitors can tour its showrooms, an assemblage Black describes as a work of art put together with furniture, tapestry, and paintings. Among numerous family portraits is one of John Frederick Sackville by Joshua Reynolds, but Black's favorite is of Arabella Cope, John's wife. It's a lovely painting of a formidable woman, she says. The house serves as a set location for the current gay-themed Tudor-Tatler Mary and George on Starz. That was Think Bridgerton or Saltburn are Scandalous? Here's the sordid history behind these English country homes. Our next article is from OdysseyTraveler.com. The British Country House, a Definitive Guide, July 18, 2023. The British Country House. Cliveden House, Burghley House, Blenheim Palace. Country houses have long stood as icons in the British landscape. From the Middle Ages until today, the historic houses have gone through various changes, evolving in styles from Jacobean to Palladian, Baroque, neoclassical, neo-Gothic, and more. All the while, they have stood in various forms, including the fortified manor house, grand mansion, and sprawling estate, as well as smaller manageable homes, villas, hunting lodges, and hideaways. Situated in rural locations, surrounded by their own land, they have stood for centuries as a place of refuge, recreation, entertainment, and employment. This article explores the history and significance of country houses in Britain. Much of the information used in this article is sourced from Clive Aslett's The Story of the Country House. What is a country house? Historians used to define a country house as a gentleman's residence in the center of a landed estate. These were houses on vast tracts of land. Rents from the tenanted farms that made up the estate paid for the house. The idea was that it was sealed and largely self-sufficient system. These were the seats of gentlemen or noblemen, those who could afford to have a country house. This implies settled occupation and the probability of a family vault in the parish church. This definition, however, does not completely hold up. It was usually only the gentry who couldn't afford a townhouse who lived in a country home full time. Others went back and forth between the country and the city. In the Middle Ages, particularly, although noblemen and women did possess seats, the place where their family had come from and members were buried, they were always on the move between castles, manor houses, and hunting lodges. They would also follow the court, which similarly roamed. Later, the great Tudor and Jacobean courtiers spent prodigiously on lavish building projects, sometimes even ruining themselves in the process. They built the country homes that many think of today, large houses and mansions, usually built to impress the monarch, with costs unrelated to the income of the estate. Others built in places that were convenient for the court or the money-making opportunities of the city of London. They were places of recreation, but closely linked to the town. The suburbs of London have since swallowed them up. In the early 20th century, most people did not want much land at all. Country houses were seen as an escape to a different, more simple way of life from the stuffy, conservative city circles associated with Edward VII and George V. Many new country houses did have land after the Second World War, but this was because they were built by landowners who were downsizing from monster houses to more manageable ones built on the same site. Another type of country house includes the villa. Villas were originally caprices, small, highly architectural buildings on the outskirts of towns, which could be visited for the day. In the 18th century, they became more permanent dwellings. These days, many new country houses are of villa size and dependent on easy access to the city. Hunting lodges and the medieval hideaways, known as pleasances, can also be considered country houses. Clive Aslett, the historian of architecture, therefore, provides a definition of the country house as a work of domestic architecture in a rural location, surrounded by its own land, although not necessarily a landed estate, and intended to seem a self-contained unit, its own little kingdom, as 19th century writers like to call it. He stresses that although farm work may have been done from it, the country house, by definition, is not a working entity like a farmhouse. Rather, it is a mini Arcadia, a place where owner and loved ones can find refuge from a harsh or volatile world. Country houses across the British Isles. Country houses can be found all over Britain. Of course, due to its economically dominant position from the Middle Ages onwards, England has more than Scotland, Wales, or Ireland. Here, peasants could produce a surplus, however modest, because of the kinder climate, while those of the other countries struggled to subsist. This meant that English landowners could collect more rent. They could also keep more sheep at a time when wool was one of the few internationally traded commodities. English kings also owned parts of France. Although they often had to fight expensive wars to keep or regain them, victory could bring vast amounts of wealth as towns were sacked and booty distributed among the leaders of the winning side. As such, England had more money to spend on domestic architecture. A special incentive was to build around London, where the houses could be seen by people of influence. Moreover, because each different country of the British Isles had its own individual history, it's not necessarily possible to treat them as a single geographical unit. Ireland was a colony, Scotland a separate kingdom. Wales was conquered by Edward I at the end of the 13th century, but its princes and warlords did not take occupation lying down. Integration with England only came under the Tudors. As such, each country has its own architectural traditions that lasted into the 18th century, and has, in the case of Scotland, also been revived since. The regional strands were spun together after the Scottish Act of Union of 1707, when Scotland was joined to England and Wales, and the Irish Act of Union of 1801, when the United Kingdom was formed. Inevitably, then, there are differences, but also shared features. Regional traditions merged with the architectural mainstream during the Georgian period, with local variations only somewhat distinct. Then, by the late 18th century, the same architects were being used throughout Britain, leading to a complete confluence of styles. We will continue this article next week. That's all for this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.